30 years have seen a quantum leap in the intuitive, creative, and abstract thinking abilities of children, as well as unprecedented rise in the incidence of ADHD, dyslexia, and autism spectrum disorders. Our guest today explains we are witnessing evolution at work. The changes in consciousness and brain function as evident in these new kids signal the widespread emergence of the fifth root race and fortunately coincide with our transition into the fifth world. My guest today, and she's been on my program a couple times before, is PMH Atwater. PMH is one of the original researchers in the field of near-death studies, and she's researched over 4,000 cases. She started work around 1978, and she's working on her 18th book now, and so we're going to talk about this book, The Children of the Fifth World, primarily today, but she might want to get into a few comments on some of her other works. PMH, it's great to have you back on the show again.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here.
Well, now, I reviewed this book, and I've got a lot of things to ask you about. Why did you write this particular book?
Well, when in my research of near-death cases, I ran across a lot of children, certainly, and child experiencers of near-death states. But in my process of working with that, I kept noticing that everyday kids, ordinary kids, I mean your neighbor's kids, were beginning to display some of the same characteristics of a child who'd had a near-death experience. And that caught my attention. And I thought, now, wait a minute here, that's not possible. Whoa, team, you know, something's going on here. So I then began, as a side research project, to just look at everyday kids, you know, normal kids. And especially those children born since about 1982. And I began to notice that really there is a huge change worldwide happening in the human family, i.e. evolution. Our whole species is beginning to rise, beginning to change, has certain characteristics in those changes. And they do match pretty much, not entirely, but they're similar, I'll say, to children who've had a near-death experience. So this is how I got started, and I wrote Children of the Fifth World. That's the only book I've written so far on the new kids, ordinary kids, normal kids that are very, very different.
You might, when I started to practice medicine in 1972, I can't remember having any kids with ADHD, dyslexia, or autism. And then, as the next decade came, the number of people with those medical problems kept increasing and increasing. And I was wondering, what's going on here? Is it chemicals in the food? Is it something?
Wait a minute here, Wynn. Just today, I live in Charlottesville, Virginia. The University of Virginia is here. They have a huge medical research department. They do first-class worldwide research. So on our newspaper today, front page of the leader on the page, UVA study, I'm reading this, health of mother's gut is tied to autism. What they are finding is, just read it, in the development of a child, they're finding that the gut of pregnant women who have experienced inflammation may be a marker for a particular kind of neurodevelopment in the child. They're looking for cytokine, C-Y-T-O-K-I-N-E, and what they're recognizing is the diet of the mother, what's in her gut at the time that she's pregnant, has a direct effect on the health of her child. Specifically, they're tying this to autism, and they're getting, you know, hit after hit after hit. And I'm just going wild here, saying, wow, you know, we've finally got a research tie to what may cause autism and why we didn't see it before.
Okay, PMH, but before you knew about this particular possibility and everything, what did you think cosmically was causing the change in children around the 80s?
We're talking about, at least I believe, the change of, how do I put this into words, this massive change in evolution of the human species. You know, that's a big word. I break it down in the book to what we can handle. But what we're beginning to see worldwide is certainly children who are more intelligent. We're seeing changes in the sexes. Do you know that we now have 5 types of sexes?
Tell me about that.
There are 5 of them. There is the straight sex, bisexual, gay, mostly straight. And others, those people that go back and forth, but they're mostly straight, and intersex, those people who either show no sign of any particular sex or, in fact, might be hermaphrodites, where they have both sexes. They're born with both. And by the way, the birth of hermaphrodites has increased tremendously globally, especially in the country of Germany. And I don't know why. You know, maybe it's something in the water. I don't know. But there's something about Germany. Yeah, they've had 100% rise in the last decade.
Well, how does this fact that there's a lot of different sexual variation in...
Well, the job of the new kids, if you're going to be looking at esoteric wisdoms, if you're looking at our various prophecies and the elders and these type of claims, this kind of study, this kind of wisdom, one of the things that's been predicted on the plus side for the new kids, and you can see it in the research, is a fusion of sexes and gender mixing. So they're here to upset the apple cart where sex is concerned. You know, how we do it, our bodies, how we display it, this whole idea of gender is now up for grabs. It's just changing remarkably and very, very quickly.
Did this start in the early 80s?
Yeah. We saw the big shift beginning in the early 80s, and I'm saying about 1982 because that's when your personal computers first came out. And I think that's, it's a really good analogy or image that we can use, because this is the computer generation. And they're coming in very, very different. And their bodies are different. Their brains are different. And they're coming in that way. They're being born that way. You know, this generation we have now, we call them the millennials. They are the first generation in history to come in viewing the world through a screen. I mean, you and I have no concept of that because we ran out the door. And our view of the world was trees, grass, you know, dogs, cats, all this other kind of stuff. With these children, their first view of the world is through a screen.
Well, that can certainly mess up your mind one way or the other.
Yeah.
Now, you said the new kids act as agents for world change by reflecting back every misguided aspect of business, politics, religion, and culture. Tell me.
Oh, they do.
You meant.
They do. They absolutely do. They reflect it back to us. Through their words, through their activities, through how they act, we're seeing ourselves in them. Every mistake we have made, at least in my opinion, every mistake we have made as adults, we see that reflected back in these kids. And they're throwing it in our face. They're not being quiet about it. They're just throwing it in our face.
Yeah, well, a lot of parents have a problem with that.
Let's just look at the basics here on the plus side. These kids are intelligent even if flunking and can't spell. Don't let them fool you. These kids are smart. About one-third of them are geniuses even if learning disabled. Very musically oriented. Of course, most kids are. They're unusually creative, spiritually minded. They're intuitive. They're psychic. Many remember past lives. They're excellent with math. And again, don't let your kids fool you about this. They're good at math. Natural healers. They're ready to go entrepreneurs. I mean, they're starting up businesses in their bedrooms. They're visionary problem solvers. They're very knowing. They're volunteer-minded, they're good humanitarians, they're groupies. They move as if part of a collective. They tend to do things together. They often attend night school in addition to dreaming. And I'd like to give you just a little example of that because it blew my mind. I was shopping in a particular shopping mall, you know, walking along these big corridors, and there was a woman next to me with her son, oh, maybe first grader. And way down the hall ahead of us, there was a mom and dad and their little boy, probably about the same age. And these two boys recognized each other, called each other by name, and ran to each other and started talking about the assignment they had received last night in night school. And they were just, you know, talking lickety-split about their assignment. The trick here is the mother next to me and her son were locals. The couple way down the hall and their little boy, they were tourists. They'd never been through that area before. So how did these two boys know each other by name? And what they were talking about is night school. And what I've found with a lot of these kids that I've worked with and their parents, they don't just go to sleep at night. Many times they'll go to what is called night school. Maybe on another level, maybe another dimension, who knows. And they're instructed, they have classes, they have assignments. And I'm looking at this as saying to myself, this is real. This is happening. I can't explain it, but it's happening. And these are also kids that abstract at very young ages. They're spatial learners. Of course, we all already know about the fusion of sexes. They're multisensory, multi-channelers who literally live in a multiverse. And then if we look at the minus side, these are impulsive, impatient, what I call quick click kids. They feel entitled. They're overconfident. They're ultimate consumers. They have an underlying anger. That is to say, they have little tolerance for lies or being manipulated. They prefer the astral and synthetic worlds. You see that, of course, in their computer games. They're highly sensitive to drugs and snack processed foods. They're also highly sensitive to incoherent energy, which is your cell phone tower out your door. They do not assimilate nutrition well. They have no concept of authority. None! No concept of authority. They need mentors, not bosses. They appear wiser than they are. Self-deception is a real issue. They're very sensitive to trickster energy. This idea of possessions. They do not get this. They do not understand the effort needed to process or refine. That is to say, they don't understand copyrights. They don't understand trademarks. They feel that they got an idea, they can take it out there and develop it and sell it. They have no idea that you have to have licenses for that. You have to have training to really perfect what you've done, on and on and on. They expect things to come to them. They do not recognize boundaries, even that of skin. And their greatest fear, get this, their greatest fear is silence. They don't know what to do with it.
Well, with these children of the fifth world that started coming in 1982.
Well, actually, a little before that, but I'm calling it 1982. Some people are saying 1980, you know.
All right. We don't know why this happened, even though I'm sure that there's plenty of people that are going to say it was a chemical, it was like something in the gut, which you talked about, whatever like that. But we don't really know why these children started appearing on the scene.
Well, what you were referring to there was specifically autism.
Well, that's part of it.
But if you look at the larger pattern, what's coming in are thirds. And if you look at the stats, they're either right at a third, two-thirds, it's all coming in thirds or close to it. For instance, one-third have both gene mutations to build a better brain. That is exceptional. One-third score genius in standard IQ tests. When I'm saying genius, I'm talking 140 and above. Most of them 150 to 160. This is globally. One-third of the autistic kids, get this, one-third of the autistic kids who take the Raven's IQ test instead of the Wechsler, which is a common one, the Raven's test for fluid intelligence, one-third of those also score between 150 to 160. So when we're talking about a kid's autistic, many of those are geniuses. They just don't communicate that like we would prefer that they did. One-third have no sense of living a full life and doesn't bother them. Two-thirds have no intention of ever marrying, going to college, or becoming parents. One-third are profoundly gifted. One-third very intelligent, intuitive, creative. One-third the other third are too violent to handle. We're getting a lot of amoral kids coming in. So we're getting and it's moving in thirds, and that's impossible. You know, I'm a researcher. That's impossible. And I've been tracking this for the last several decades, and it's hanging pretty close to that, pretty close to thirds. And, you know, and I'm asking myself here, wait a minute here, what? I mean, why? I mean, this is just crazy. And what I'm recognizing is that the division of thirds is how the universe, our world, creation, that's the basic design of universal order. Your thirds, that's where strength comes from. The Holy Trinity, the third spatial law is karma. The third spiritual tradition is the golden rule. Thirds are rhythmic proportions in the golden mean. Nature's preference for harmony, balance, and beauty. So I'm sitting back here and I'm saying, okay, third is the universal law for order and beauty. So why are we getting this particular mix? And why are we getting a particular mix at all? And the only thing I can think of is, you know, something else is in charge here. We can talk about rhythms. We can talk about God. We can talk about universal spirituality. But something else is going on here besides food, besides. You know, we can't explain this.
Okay, so we've got this thing that's happening, and you say it's a change in human consciousness.
Yeah, it is.
But something I didn't understand that you can explain probably basically, what is this about the fifth root race?
Well, you're going to go into esoteric wisdoms here and prophecy, and then Edgar Cayce, the greatest living, the greatest prophet we ever had, that we have record of, talked about the human race coming into the earth plane, and coming in different broad groups and types. And so he has this stair step prophecy, if you will, of the different orders, the first order, the second order, the third, fourth, and the fifth. You get the same thing in theosophy when you're looking at that particular branch of prophecy and what they have found through the inner planes and through their prayer work and through guidance. And they also have a very similar ladder of orders. And if you look at these orders, it looks to me at least that we're looking at how the human race changes, how it becomes better and better and better. These different huge sweeping changes in the human race. So if we look at these, and I detail them in the book Children of the Fifth World, when we look at where we are now in the order of prophecy, it matches. It matches our environment. It matches what's going on here now. It's a really good match. So I'm saying, wait a minute here. looks to me like those old codes, those old prophecies were right on.
Okay, but the fifth root race, what is root race?
Well, root, R-O-O-T, applies to, how do I put this into words? It applies to that general pattern of elements in the human body, elements in the human brain, elements in how we behave, elements in our governance and what we did and what we do at that particular time, how we change as a human race, how we change in broad, large cycles. And I think everyone can relate to that, how we've changed over time. Certainly we've changed a lot since the caveman days. And those broad, huge cycles of how the human race has ordered itself and altered itself, and those certainly have been affected by the climate and large changes in our planet, leading us to where we are now. And a lot of the changes that are happening now, of course, we're looking at a lot of external reasons for that. We're also looking for internal reasons for that. And what I'm recognizing as a researcher is you look at these old prophecies, and they're matching pretty much how the human race has indeed developed over time. And these old prophecies claim, you know, even some of the Native Americans, even some of the people in the Native peoples in South America. I mean, it's all over the world. It's not just here in the United States. And they talk about the changing of the human race, the changing of people, and how that's cyclic. And then they describe the cycles. And there's a lot of back and forth connections here that have led me, at least, to believe that this is very valid.
How does the DNA in a person in the gene pool fit into this?
Well, certainly it right on. It does fit, and our DNA is changing. All parts of us is changing. That's it. That's the basic code. That's the basic seed, if you will. That's the basic root, and that is, I mean, just look at how our DNA has changed just since about 1982 with the invention of the personal computer. I mean, just look at how that computer and social media and the internet has literally changed our makeup. It's changing our brain. We're now seeing changes in the DNA from computers, and it's startling. Some of it's great, and some of it is very troubling.
Okay, well, here's another thing that I didn't understand that you could explain to the listeners.
Well, hopefully.
Tell me about the fifth world.
Okay. I'd like to be able to put my hands on that. You know, I mean, I've written 17 books, so I'm trying to put my hands on the exact description of the fifth world. Not doing it. Could you tell me what page in the book?
Did you write about it in Children of the Fifth World? I suppose you did.
Well, yeah, but I'm...
Well, if there's a fifth world, whatever that might be, There must have been a first world, second.
Oh, yeah, right, and the root races. Okay, here we go. The first root race, supposedly, was very etheric. It began about 18 million years ago, contrary to our current science. The entry of spirit into matter. The second root race was Hyperborean. It supposedly began, the first one 18 million years ago, this one 8 million years ago, with early physical forms, gender differences, centered today in what we now call the Arctic and the northern climes. You know, we know that the Scandinavian countries were had a lot of flowers, really a very temperate climate, not at all like we have today with glaciers and ice and all that kind of stuff. The third root race began supposedly about a million years ago, the full flowering of genders, racial groups, darker skins, movement to southern regions. The fourth root race supposedly began about 85,000 years ago, but it has covered a lot of land and a lot of types. It's the progenitor of the modern body types. Then we have the fifth root race, and it's actually been around for a while. It's now rising. It's now coming into fruition, if you want to use that term, but it actually began maybe 5,000-10,000 years ago. So it's been around for a while. What we're seeing now is the rise of that race, where it's coming into its fullness, and then we go into the sixth race, and they predict also a seventh race. But what I like, especially when we're talking more specifically about the fifth, the fourth and fifth root race. Let's see if I can get that exactly, because I somewhere between the fourth and fifth root race. So we've got a lot of people, a lot of civilizations, a lot of history that's going on here. There was a split, almost like the split in the hemispheres of the brain, left brain, right brain. There was this split. And we can look at the coming of Christopher Columbus, for instance. I think he's part of what healed that split. And I'm not being complimentary here about Columbus. 5 centuries ago, that's the time of Christopher Columbus. Don't you love that word five, or the number five? And if you want to check on this, get the book 1493 by Charles C. Mann, M-A-N-N. When Columbus came, it wasn't just a discovering of the New World. What came with him were men who were sick. Many of them had just incredible diseases. Also came a lot of rats. Also came a lot of bacteria and viruses. A whole lot of things came just besides his nibs, Christopher Columbus. And within 100 years of his coming and setting foot on the New World, get this, 1 in 5 people across the world died from diseases, multiple types of slavery, brutal working conditions, industrialization, hunger, environmental destruction, because he brought with him business, the business of enslavement. the business of taking advantage of what he saw, to then what we would say industrialize, certainly he would say, I'm going to make a lot of money here. And you can look at Christopher Columbus's diaries that he kept. And he looked at these new people as slaves. Whoa. You know, they're wonderful people. They're giving him all kinds of food and helping him. And he's looking at them and saying, oh, what wonderful slaves they would make. So they're not looking, he's not looking at the new people. He's looking at slaves. So that made the split larger. But in recognizing that, we the people, especially since then, are starting to realize that, wait a minute here, whoa team, everybody has a place in this world. We don't have the right to make slaves of our neighbors. And so it's like a revamping and a we're looking at our place in our country, in the world, in the universe, very differently now. And we're moving into, we hope, a better world. The time of Columbus was the birth of the modern world. He's the one who got things started for the kind of banking and working conditions and on and on and on, the industrialized world that we have today. Now, today, what is happening is people like Monsanto, DuPont, BASF, Syngenta, 5 centuries later, when Columbus came over, he started the world's first homogenosine. A homogenosine is the mixing of unlike substances to create a uniform blend. So all of a sudden, we got all of these new foods all coming together, like peppers and squash and on and on and on. It's the birth of the modern world as we know it today. Today, we've got all of these companies coming together with genetic modifications of food, trees, bushes, land. They are literally copywriting the chemical codes of every living thing. GMOs, along with brain changes caused by digital excesses, planetary geoengineering, rocket science, skyrocketing drug, alcohol, and addiction effects. All of this is tearing apart that original code and bringing us into, hopefully, the birth of a united world. And if you look at the stats, we can see where our recognition of what we've done as a society and civilization itself and our realization, we can turn it around. That is what is. We now have the second homogenosine, GMOs, the second homogenosine. It is changing the world, and we're changing with it. But now we can recognize how to do it. It's not magic. You don't wave a magic wand. But little by little, we're waking up. And that's what's making, I'm very excited about this. People are looking at the world today with doom and gloom, and I'm looking at the world today and saying, people are waking up. They're realizing that we did it, and we can change it.
PMH Atwater, Children of the Fifth World. PMH, how do they get a copy of that book so that they can understand and more depth what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, point by point, I go through all of this and the fifth world, and we can recognize that we're in the fifth world by all these things that are happening. I mean, it's just incredible. Look, the five basic forces. We now recognize five. There's not four basic forces anymore. There's five. Electromagnetism, gravity, strong nuclear force, weak nuclear force, and torsion waves. Torsion waves can be influenced by consciousness, passes through all shielding, and is not weakened by distance. We can use that for energy healing, has a role in the life process. It is the torsion waves are the information carriers. They ensure that nothing is ever lost. So we've got all of these changes that are happening. We're now in the fifth world, the fifth root rays, the fifth element. The fifth element is ether. The fifth chakra is willpower. The fifth brain is the heart. Did you realize that the heart has, well, I know you must realize it. Everybody else, wake up here. Over 65% of the cells in the heart are neural cells. Yes, the heart is a brain. We've got the fifth brain wave energy frequency. It's gamma rays. You know, it's not just delta and, we're going up the ladder to beta waves. Hey, folks, we now have gamma. Gamma goes up to 40 hertz and above. And people are now operating on the gamma rays wave. And it just goes on and on. Five types of intelligence? Yeah, we've got five ways of measuring intelligence now. IQ is mental intelligence. EQ is emotional intelligence. SQ is spiritual intelligence. WQ is holistic intelligence. QQ is quantum intelligence. You know, the fifth brain, which is the heart.
Yeah, that's an interesting concept. But tell our audience how's the best way to get a copy of your book.
Well, certainly on the Internet, Amazon.com, you can get it from me. You can order it from any bookstore.
What's your website?
My website is www.pmhatwater.com. That's my name, Atwater, PMH. That's my name. And if you get on my website, certainly I have a little bookstore there. But you can also subscribe to my free monthly newsletter.
Right.
And so please do that. It's on my website. There's an archive of past issues. I call it the newsletter for the curious.
Okay. Now, before our time is up, I want to switch a little bit.
Okay.
I want to talk about near-death experiences. You had three. You had three. Briefly describe them and tell me what came out of those near-death experiences. Did you get a message? Did you get a purpose?
What are you talking about, me or in general?
No, you.
Me? Oh. Okay. We're going back in time, 1977. I died three times in 3 months. January 2, January 4, and March 29. That fall, I had three major relapses, one of which was total adrenal failure. I had to rebuild my body. I had to relearn how to crawl, how to stand, how to walk, how to climb stairs, how to run, how to tell the difference between left and right, how to see properly, how to hear properly, and rebuild all my belief systems. I was on my way to being a bank manager. I was taking classes with the American Institute of Banking when I died. So that sort of changed all that. You know, my main goal was just to be a human being again. And yes, each of my three experiences, each one of them made a tremendous difference in my life. The first one was primarily out of body, but it had a lot of other elements in it besides that. The second one was very long, you know, it seemed very long to me. Who can say that? I mean, you're not watching a clock, so I don't know how long it was. I'm going to guess 20 minutes, but I don't know. And that was very involved. And in my third near-death experience, that was also long, also very involved. Each was different, by the way. But in my third one, a voice spoke to me. And it wasn't an angel or guide or guardian or biblical figure or any of that kind of stuff. It was a voice so big. You know, how can you describe that kind of voice? It was bigger than big. It was like bigger than the whole universe. And that voice said, and I quote, "Test revelation. You are to do the research. One book for each death." It showed me what was to be in each book. It did not show me how to do it. It did, with book number one, it did not tell me anything about book number one, so I have no idea what book that was. I'm assuming maybe it might have been Coming Back to Life, which is still available over Amazon.com. Book two was Future Memory. It named it Future Memory, told me how to, showed me how to write the book. Future Memory, by the way, is not a book. Ah! Fooled ya! No, not. It is a labyrinth. It is a real labyrinth, like a sight labyrinth. You read through it like you walk through a sight labyrinth. Every sentence, every paragraph, every page in that book is part of the math I used to create the design of the labyrinth. So it's a real labyrinth. Purpose of reading the book is to raise your consciousness up to the next highest level possible for you. The third book came out last year. It's called A Manual for Developing Humans. It has all of the basics that anybody would ever need, I don't care what country in the world you're living in, to be fully who you are. We sort of toss around the word human without realizing back who knows how many hundreds, thousands of years ago, the word hue, the sound of hue, H-U, was the sound, the people felt that was the sound of God. So the idea of human, human, that's God-man, God-woman. And you get this influence and you get this knowledge and intelligence in all of the world's great religions. In our Bible, for instance, it says, and I quote, "Ye are gods in the making." So if you are fully who you are, fully the human being you were born to be, then literally you are God in the making. The manual is fun. It's filled with thought form drawings. Yes, I did them. The book has six sections. each is divided into threes. The whole book is based on three. And it has the format of a fifth world book. In other words, it has that fifth dimensional format. So when you're looking at the book, when you're flipping through it, when you're reading through it, it's not a regular linear book at all. It's a fifth dimensional book. So you're getting spiritual, or you're getting the regular linear look at things. You're getting the more abstract look of things, and then you're getting the spiritual look at things. You're getting left brain, right brain, whole brain, and you're getting it all at once throughout the entire book.
Sure.
So it's not like any other manual you've ever seen, ever thought of, ever read.
Maybe we can do another program because we're running short on time.
Oh, okay, sorry. I'm like the Energizer Bunny, you know, you wind me up and I go and go.
Let her go. But here's a basic question, and maybe you can answer it fairly quickly. Near-death experiences to a lot of people prove God. What's your opinion?
Well, they certainly prove a higher order. They prove a higher energy, whether you want to use that term G-O-D or not. And many don't. Many call that force or source, core, or the one, or, you know, deity, whatever word you want to use, because remember, this is global. So not everybody's going to use the word G-O-D.
PMH, regardless of what term they use,
Yeah. Are
we not talking about a force that created the universe and created each of us as individuals?
I would say about 7/8 of them do. And they don't come back believing God. They come back knowing God. So everything is elevated then to that higher level of consciousness. They come back knowing God.
And how about a purpose? Did you get a purpose out of what?
Well, certainly I did.
Near-death experience?
Not everybody gets a verbatim purpose. In fact, very few do. In fact, most of them come back saying the greatest pain they have or disappointment they have is they were that they knew they were coming back for a purpose, but that purpose was not told to them.
Right.
It didn't have a name. Very few of us came back with a specific purpose. The child experiencers have a great way of dealing with that. They say, go with what you are led to do. That is your purpose.
Okay, I got it. We're talking with PMH Atwater today. The book that we're discussing is Children of the Fifth World. She's written 17 books, and she's got a new book that she's writing. It's The Forever Angels, right?
Right, and no one has tackled child experiencers at all in the world like I'm doing in this book. Not only am I focusing the entire book just on birth to the age of five and the womb, so we're taking a big, huge examination of just the tiny ones, but I've previously done a study, a large study, on the children. And then looking forward, now I've gone back and I've looked for child experiencers, fully grown, who are now in their 50s, 60s, and 70s. My oldest one is 86. And I'm saying to them, go back. Look at your life. What difference did that experience make before you? What was your life like afterward? So I've got the before, I've got the afterward looking back. So I've got both directions now, which enables me to look at the near-death experience, but specifically at children like no one else has been able to do. And I'll tell you, the results are absolutely shocking.
Well,
it's not like what we thought at all.
Yeah, I'm for one really interested in that book and looking forward to when it's coming out.
Probably next year.
Okay.
I'd like it to stay in the summer, but it might be August,
okay.
So about a year from now.
Great.
Look, I'm still writing it. I'm now on chapter 14.
Now, let me just throw in a little plug for my work.
You betcha.
You had a near-death experience and gained insight. I had a spiritual dream in which God told me that he had a book that he wanted written about how to help the world with their problem with addiction and what to do about it. So I wrote that book. And subsequently, before and after, I've written 41 other books.
Oh, my word! you're more than me.
Yeah, I got you beat right now.
Yeah, you do.
but anyway, so I want the people to know that you can hear 80 of my programs, more than that, on iTunes podcast. The program is called Freedom from Addiction, and you can go to Google search and just search iTunes podcast, Freedom from Addiction, Wynn Henderson. It'll bring up the link. You go over there, subscribe, and find out everything God had to say about the problem with addiction, which, you know, is a real good resource. And also my website for my new book is called Freedom from Addiction, then the number 3.com. And go over to my website and check that out, because you're going to find out a lot of stuff that you had no idea was happening and what the cause of it was. And so I'll just throw that out, and PMH will have you on the World Wide Web here very shortly, and people can hear everything that you had to say for this hour, and hopefully you'll get a lot of people over at your website to...
Well, that would be great.
Yeah, okay. So thanks very much for...
Well, kudos for you. Thank you for your work. My word, you're our hero.
Thanks. Okay, well, I'll see you next time.
Okay.